I want to think about how Israel obeyed this command about passing over Jordan. And in the day that you pass over Jordan, Deuteronomy 27 says, they were to set up plastered stones with the law written upon them. And they were to do this and put them in Mount Ebal. Now, what was to be written on the stones isn't clear, perhaps just the Ten Commandments or the list of blessings and cursings. And I suppose you could say that they were to put them on the plaster of the stones to show how the law eventually was to pass away. Well, they were to do this, we're told, at a location opposite Gilgal, where they camped. So they came out of Egypt when they'd been through the wilderness. They camped opposite Jericho at Gilgal, and then they crossed the Jordan and took Jericho. Well, Deuteronomy 11 defines in more detail where exactly this spot should be. When Yahweh your God brings you into the land, you shall set the blessing on Mount Gerizim and the curse on Mount Ebal. They are just over Jordan, opposite Gilgal, beside the oaks of Moreh. So this location appears to be just over the Jordan from Gilgal. That's what they were told to do in the day that you pass over Jordan. Well, did they fulfill that? The ceremony of blessing and cursing was to have been done immediately they entered the land. Now, there's a lot of debate about where Mount Ebal and Gerizim were. That is the Ebal and Gerizim that are in view here. Deuteronomy 11 is quite clear that they are opposite Gilgal, just over the Jordan. Deuteronomy 27 says, in the day that you pass over Jordan, you are to do this. Well, they pass over Jordan, but they don't do this. They don't do it until Joshua 8, verse 30. And that was not in the day that Israel had passed over Jordan. They did take stones with them out of the Jordan, but they didn't use them in this way. They just stuck them up as a sort of memorial that we crossed the River Jordan. They didn't put plaster on them. They didn't write the law upon them. And so what they did in Joshua 8 was not at all what was in view earlier in Deuteronomy 11, Deuteronomy 27. And remember that Deuteronomy was given by Moses possibly in the very day that he died, at least in the last month. So it was given just before they crossed the Jordan. Instead, the people go against Jericho and take quite a while to capture it, then against Ai, there's a setback there, etc. Not until Joshua 8 do they do this. So, again you see Israel's disobedience. All the way through the history of Israel, you are seeing their disobedience. All the way through, you know, they're told with the manna, don't go out on the Sabbath to try to collect it, it won't be there, but they go out and see if there's any there. All the way through, it's the same. And yet God gave them that amazing victory against Jericho. The walls of Jericho came tumbling down by his miracle, by his grace. So I think that you see here just a simple takeaway that despite human disobedience, God still works his plan. It is almost as if he has got this idea of saving us and saving his people, and he is going to push this plan through, almost, and of course I have to say almost despite human failure. When he reveals himself to Moses as Yahweh in Exodus 3 and Exodus 6, he says seven times, I will bring you out of Egypt. I will get you through the wilderness. I will drive out the nations in Canaan. I will give you the kingdom. And so he then says, and my name is I will be who I will be. And that's the context of it. He says, I am right now going to do this. I will do it. And I have done so. He says, by my name Yahweh, was I not known in the past? Yes, I was. So you could say that the whole essence of the Yahweh name is I will save. And this came to its full term in Yahoshua, Yahweh saves, Jesus in Greek. He was the the absolute apex of that whole intention of God, that will of God, that I will save you. Now, I'm not saying that somebody shall be dragged into God's kingdom kicking and screaming when they truly do not want to be there, and there's plenty of examples in the history of Israel how that worked out. But I think it is a great encouragement to us who are weak. We are not of those who draw back, who say, I don't want to be saved, I don't want any of this stuff. We want to be, absolutely, but we're weak. And that is where the Yahweh name and his whole way of forcing through his project to save us becomes so wonderful, that he will do this. And this is the great comfort, and you see it in lives around you, and you see it in lives historically recorded in the Bible, and you can see it in your own life, that there is this will of God to save in the end. So God is not impartial. God is not somehow impassionate, that he's not somehow absolutely cold about this, leaving it all up to us. He passionately wants our salvation. He wants us to be in his kingdom. This is what he's all about. This is what Jesus is all about. And that is the comfort that we can take as you see these multiple examples of Israel's repeated failures, that all the way through, God still pushes through that saving purpose.